Chapter 2, Scarrato, DV, minus 91 days. In the years of the Great Crusade, the conclaves of legions were magnificent affairs, filled with celebration, ceremony, and grandeur. Alonai was wistful, staring into the flames in the immense fireplace that illuminated the great hall. The fire glinted from the dozen golden service studs that pierced his brow and scalp. This feels more like a council of thieves. The immense hall was used to far grander occasions, like those that Alonai now remembered. Nearly 200 meters long and 40 meters high, its huge vaulted ceiling was held aloft by pillars like the legs of titans. The grand fireplace was large enough that a rhino could have been driven into it, and the heat from the gas-fired blaze was easily felt, although the space marine was several dozen meters away. Hidden in the chimney was a heat reclamation system that powered the enormous chandeliers hanging like constellations above. It was the only chamber in which his Primarch felt comfortable, it seemed. The other rooms of the palaces were too small to contain his energy. The corridors too tight, even for one who had been raised in the cells of Lycaeus. Since his declaration and their arrival at Scarrato, he had been full of movement, barely able to hold in check the desire for action. He sat on a custom-made throne behind a large desk that had been brought down from the stateroom of the Avenger. Combined with the gilded decor and bright frescoes of the hall, it made for a grandiose office, more suited to gala balls than councils of war.
"Circumstances dictate," replied the Primarch. "What is the latest tally?"
312 legionaries, said Alonai, not needing to check the data slate in his hands. "A small cargo lighter, retrofitted with warp engines and Geller fields, just arrived with 7 iron hands on board. They'd been holding out in the Aquinia system."
"I told Arcatus they would come if we called," said Korax.
He leaned forward, pushing aside the piles of reports on the desk. He was about to speak, but looked away at the sound of the doors opening. Alonai turned his head to see Baroness Naima Starothrender enter. Short, middle-aged, with a distinct limp and a freshly healing cut across her left cheek, she was physically underwhelming. But on Scarrato, it had been her refusal to give in to the Sons of Horus, her tenacity to keep alive some of the old ruling class and muster a resistance movement which had paved the way for the rebellion instigated by Alonai's secret insertion less than 100 days earlier. She approached the Primarch, forcing Alonai to step aside so that she could stand by the desk. Not for a moment had she doubted the Space Marine would give way. Her expression was stern, but when she spoke, her words were soft. "A few rebel elements, those that openly collaborated with the Sons of Horus, are still holding out in a few of their bolt holes," the de facto world ruler told them. "I have set in motion legal procedure to set up tribunals, but I fear the people are too hot-blooded and angry to wait for due process."
"Understandable, but intolerable," said Korax, equally quietly spoken.
He regarded Naima for a few moments, rubbing his chin with a long finger.
"I sense you have a further proposal to stave off mob justice."
"We need to issue a joint statement," said Naima, folding her arms. "A call from both of us together, asking for calm, should assuage the worst anguish. You are well known as a liberator and a warrior of justice. If you add your word to mine, if you guarantee that those who turned on their own people will face punishment, the people of Scarrato will believe us."
"I cannot make such a promise," said Korax. He shrugged. "I have every faith that you will keep your word, but I will not be here to ensure adherence to Imperial law."
"Some warriors will remain, surely." Naima tensed, eyes flickering to Alonai. "You must maintain some kind of presence here after the tumult you have unleashed. 12 ships in as many days, and what of those that arrive after you have left, or if the Sons of Horus return to reclaim what you have taken from them?"
"I have prized the grip of Horus from Scarrato, but it is up to the people of your world to prevent it tightening again. We will leave a few ships that you can crew, but my legionaries will be needed elsewhere, freeing other planets and systems." Naima sagged, but Korax smiled and stood up, extending a hand to the woman. The Primarch looked right at her, black eyes glinting in the light of the fire, skin like chalk.
When the Sons of Horus came here before, they were at the height of their power, in great numbers. It is my aim that they will not come back, and certainly not with such force. But to achieve this, I must wage war in other places. If I remain, if I turn Skarato into a base for operations, you can be certain that the traitors will return, in numbers such as I cannot protect against.
Lord Korax, I know that you have matters far grander than the fate of Skarato to trouble your thoughts, but for us, for me, the safety of this world and its people is the extent of our concerns. You tell us that to support Horus would be bad for Skarato, and I believe you, I really do. The Sons of Horus were not benevolent masters. We know that from recent experience. Naima waved a hand towards the doors of the hall. But my people are afraid. Better, they might say, to have a bad master but live, than resist and be slain.
You cannot concede to counsel of despair, said Alonai, agitated by this attitude. Skarato has passed a handful of years under the yoke of a tyrant. Our world, Lycaeus, the world where I was raised, knew tyranny for countless generations. I was a child, born into a prison, judged guilty simply because I was conceived by a woman who had tried to organize a petition against an overseer who would not allow her to take rest breaks due to the pains of her pregnancy. I never knew that there could be a life other than imprisonment and toil, from my first memories until I was big enough to lift a lazpick. There were those whose only crimes were to have descended from ancestors 7, 8 generations back that had displeased the despots of Kiava.
The thought of it riled Alonai even after so long, his stare intent upon the Skaratoan leader. Fists formed at his sides as he grimaced at the recollection.
If you capitulate to the threat of Horus, it would be to condemn your people to share that fate,
Alonai continued.
I know it is hard, but Lord Korax showed us that one does not have to simply accept the choice between slavery and death. Perhaps for ourselves, we must offer up our lives, but such sacrifice can bring freedom to others.
Naima was taken aback by the vehemence of Alonai's argument. When he had arrived at Skarato, he had found a resistance movement thriving, building for an appointed rebellion. There had been no need for rhetoric and argument. All that had been required was the assurance that if the resistance moved, the Raven Guard would answer. His presence alone had sparked hope. Naima looked at the commander for some time, a slight frown creasing the tanned skin of her forehead. He wondered if she was troubled by his words, or was trying to work out if he was simple. She scratched at an earlobe, a sign of deep thought that Alonai had noticed before.
There are no guarantees, said Korax, sitting down,
hands clasping the arms of his throne. His expression hardened.
Only choices.
I understand, Naima said slowly. She looked at Alonai, and there was a hint of pity in her eyes. The Space Marine chose to make no remark. He would never be a victim again, thanks to Korax and the Emperor. Naima assumed a more upright stance and tugged at the hem of her jacket to straighten it. When she next spoke, her tone was more businesslike. Thank you for having faith in the people of Skarato, Lord Korax. I hope that you find everything to your satisfaction.
Exemplary, said the Primarch. Your people's hospitality is matched by their efficiency.
I wonder if I could trouble you for one more piece of advice, Naima said. Korax nodded. I am sure that there are those who will attempt to make a push for power when you have departed. Factions that have benefited from the occupation will seek to restore some of what they have lost. Like you, I have no desire for pogroms and persecution, and I must be able to trust those I appoint to positions of power. How can you be sure of their motives? How can you lead them without trusting them?
It was an issue I first encountered when I was planning the uprising on Lycaeus,
said the Primarch. All endeavor is only as certain as the weakest will. There were prisoners that would have been all too willing to betray my cause in return for privileges from the guards. My people knew who they were for the most part, but as the movement grew, I could not personally vet every fighter pledged to the cause. During the preparations, I created task forces who knew little of each other, so that no single part of the movement could bring down the whole effort. However, this was not enough to guarantee our security. When the time came for open fighting, I reorganized the cells, swapping leaders and personnel between them, so that had any conspiracy arisen, it would then be broken apart. Momentum and action are the guard against corruption. When power is taken for granted, idleness follows. And after that, well, none of us need any further lessons in the price of corruption.
We will do the same with the warriors from other legions that answer our call, added Aloni when Korax fell silent. Existing formations are being broken up. Commanders and sergeants move from one to another. Former placements and allegiances are no longer relevant. If a group of traitors has arrived, masquerading their intent, then their ability to perform treachery is much impaired by being separated. In our experience, it will not take long for each of the new formations to determine the true loyalties of those that make up their number. A root and branch reorganization, said Naima. I am not sure my fellow nobles will be so pleased to hear that.
It is the only way to break power blocks and ensure mutual interest, said Korax. You will have to give up your own position in time, in order that the people can see you are not invested in maintaining your own power indefinitely.
Is that your intent, Lord Korax? Asked Naima. Would you be ready to hand over command of your legion to another, to avoid similar accusations of self-aggrandizement? Aloni noticed her sharp look directed at the Primarch. It was the first time the commander had heard any suggestion that his leader might contemplate stepping aside. Questions sprang to mind, dozens of them, but the Raven Guard kept his silence and waited for the Primarch's reply. Korax did not answer for some time. When he did, he glanced at Aloni and then met Naima's stare with his own.
Yes, I have always desired to stand aside for others in due course. There will come a time when my continued presence causes more harm than good. I had thought that moment approaching, but Horus made other plans. He most certainly was not ready to relinquish power.
And you think that you are the best person to decide when that moment will come again? Said Naima, doubt in her voice. Aloni wondered if the doubt was for herself or directed at Korax. Are you so self-aware and strong-willed?
I do not know.
A crooked smile twisted the Primarch's lips.
If there comes a moment when I am utterly convinced, I will know when the time is right. That will be when I must step aside.